Hello, welcome to the Saturn edition of your local talking newspaper covering St Albans and the outstanding district. This edition is for the week ending August the 10th, 2019. I'm Michael, one of your readers for tonight, and I'm joined in the studio by John and Roy. The piece of music you've just heard is called Striding Out, and we'll play all of it at the end of this recording. As usual, our thanks go to Goffby, who composed the music and has given us permission to use it. All the news items in this recording have been taken from the Hearts Advertiser, and we will finish with a summary of the radio programmes we think you might enjoy over the next week. Here is John with the first item.
Hello, everyone. The first item is about the theft of bicycles from the St Albans City Station. The headline is Bike Thefts Epidemic Due to Poor Station Security. A cyclist is calling for increased security after St Albans City was shamed for having the most bike thefts from any railway station in the UK. That's the subheading. So, Marshalswick resident Jason Wills took up cycling so he could take part in charity events to raise money for his daughter, who has type 1 diabetes. His bike was stolen from the station in October last year, and the CCTV was not good enough for the police to be able to identify the thief. Over the last 3 years, a total of 262 bicycles have been stolen from St Albans Station, more than any other station in the UK. Jason, who works in marketing and commutes to London two or three times a week, said, "I left my bike at the station in the morning, and by the time I got back, it had been stolen. It was within 7 or 8 metres of the CCTV. Apparently, someone had taken bolt cutters to the lock and simply walked off with my bike. I reported it to the police, but it was a bit difficult to know if it was a normal police matter or for British Transport Police. Jason's bike cost £450 and had been a birthday present from his wife. He said, "I'd done charity fundraising for my daughter, who has diabetes. I had an emotional connection to this bike. It wasn't just for getting to and from the station. The station is saying they've had great facilities for parking bikes, which they have, but they haven't invested in or thought about security for the bikes. There's clearly a concentrated focus to take bikes from St Albans City Station, but there's clearly a lack of security." Meanwhile, a friend of Jason's also went to the station on Tuesday and said that two people's bikes had been stolen. Jason adds, "We're all encouraged to be more environmentally friendly and conscious, and I wish the station and the police would sort out the security. I just take an old second-hand bike to the station now. St Albans Station has more bike thefts than any other in the UK."
Hello, this is Roy. Now a related article about bike thefts. And the headline is, "Railway Station has highest number of bike thefts in the country." St Albans Railway Station has the highest number of bike thefts in the UK, new figures have revealed. Over the last 3 years, a total of 262 bicycles have been stolen from the station, which is more than any other in the UK. Although St Albans has the highest number of bike thefts, in 2018, this equated to one theft for every 100,000 visitors. Harpenden Station has had 116 push bikes snatched over the past 3 years, making it the 12th highest in the UK list of 1,026 stations. Radlett has only had 8 bikes stolen in the last 3 years, ranking 501st in the list. The figures have been released by British Transport Police and are from the start of April 2016 to the end of March 2019, broken down by each financial year. With more and more people wanting to reduce their carbon footprint and the cost of commuting, cycling is becoming a more popular choice of travel to and from stations. Among stations which have released data about the number of secure spaces for bikes it has, St Albans has the second highest with 1,150 spaces, behind only Cambridge. Harpenden has 548 spaces, while Radlett has 100. Father of two, Jason Wills, aged 50, from St Albans, had his £450 hybrid bike stolen from the station. He locked it up one morning, and when he returned in the evening, the lock had been cut by thieves with wire cutters. The bike was a birthday present from his wife, and Jason had also been using it to fundraise for children with diabetes. Reflecting on the incident, he said, "I just don't trust the security at the station, and I don't want to leave my bike there." A spokesman for Govia Thameslink, which owns St Albans Station, said, "As part of our commitment to boost sustainable travel, we have installed many more bike racks to encourage more people to cycle. We've been hugely successful at St Albans, which is relatively small and yet has the second most bike racks for any station in the country. As a percentage of the number of people travelling through St Albans, the rate of bike theft is low. It ranks 213th in the UK list. However, we recognise the issue and will be creating more secure facilities with improved lighting and CCTV as part of our 5 million upgrade of the station."
Staying with acts that are unpleasant, this is entitled "Alleged Anti-Semitic Assault in City Centre Investigated." Police are investigating an alleged racially aggravated assault against a family in St Albans city centre. The attack is said to have taken place outside Costa Coffee in St Peter's Street at around 2:15 in the afternoon on Sunday. A suspect has been identified, and police have thanked members of the public for coming forward with information. According to reports, a 30-year-old man was sat outside the cafe with his family when a man walked past and shoved the family's pram, which the victim's nephew was in. When the victim challenged the man, he responded with racial abuse, reported as being anti-Semitic. He then kicked an advertising board at the victim before walking away, continuing to use racially abusive language. Jeanette Grimby, vice chairman of St Albans United Synagogue, said, "I've lived here for more than 50 years and have never experienced any anti-Semitism. I've always said this is one of the blessings of living here, that most of the religious groups live together in perfect harmony. They were visitors to St Albans who've been attacked. To my almost certain knowledge, no members of our community have ever suffered any anti-Semitic abuse in St Albans." PC Dawn Rust from St Albans Safer Neighbourhood Team, who is investigating, said, "We're still keen to speak to witnesses who may have seen what happened. We take hate crime very seriously and will always investigate reports. We know hate crime has a huge impact on victims and the community, and I'd urge victims to report it to police so we can take appropriate action. Any witnesses or anyone with information, contact Hearts Police on the non-emergency number 101, quoting crime reference 41/70651/19.
Well, here's another very serious item. The headline reads, "Scarecrow Festival cancelled after village murder probe is launched." Organisers have decided not to hold the annual Flamsteed event following the death of resident Christine Ford. Her body was discovered in her almshouse property on the High Street on Saturday, the 27th of July, and a 64-year-old man has since been charged with her murder. In a statement made on August the 2nd, a week before the start of the festival, the Flamsteed Scarecrow Festival Committee said that under the circumstances, they felt obliged to cancel the proceedings. Reverend Tom Sander from St Leonard's Church in Sandridge explained, "It was the decision of the committee together to cancel the Scarecrow Festival. It's a decision that has been taken and raised sympathetically by the people. It was not an easy decision. I want to pay tribute to the hard work of the committee. The Scarecrow Festival first started in 2002 and over the years the village has welcomed thousands of people to walk its streets and vote on their favourite display during a long weekend in August. Reverend Sanders added, "The festival will be back next year in its normal format, and we look forward to all that it brings to our community." Last year's festival raised £23,000 for Friends of St Leonard's and the Flamsteed Heritage Project, organisations intended to promote and fund full repairs of the 900-year-old Grade 1 listed building. St Leonard's Church held a vigil in the wake of her death last week, offering support to those saddened by the event and a chance to pay their respects. Incidentally, I do apologise, I think I said St Leonard's Church, Sandridge. It is, of course, St Leonard's Church in Flamsteed. Father Tom described Christine as a very nice, kind and thoughtful person. I know she cared a lot about her family. She loved gardening and she did the flowers in the church as well. People have turned to the church and are welcome to do so. People often come to the church for comfort and hope at times like this. Brian Coote, aged 64, of High Street, Flamsteed, appeared in court in Hatfield on Saturday, August 3rd, charged with murder. He was due to appear at Luton Crown Court yesterday.
New beginning looms as pub goes up for sale at £110,000. An historic St Albans pub is up for sale after 2.5 years under its current ownership. The Rose and Crown on St Michael's Street was taken over by two new owners, including St Michael's Manor Hotel General Manager Richard Marrett, in February 2017. Now the traditional 16th century pub is being advertised at a leasehold price of £110,000. Co-owner Richard stressed the business was doing well and said the decision had been taken so he can focus exclusively on growing the hotel business. He said, "It's for personal reasons. Running the Rose and Crown on its own is a full-time job, and running St Michael's Manor is a full-time job. I take my hat off to anybody who is more than one site at once." He's been general manager of the hotel in Fishbourne Street since 2011. Previous owners of the Rose and Crown, Nigel Wilde and Gary Hatchman, successfully campaigned to keep it open when Punch Taverns pushed for eviction. Richard added, "I'm gutted because I love the pub and we've worked hard to build it up, but we're feeling positive. We are disappointed that we're going to lose it, but we're looking forward to handing it over to someone else." Richard is optimistic that suitable new owners can be found, as there has already been a few interested parties. Meanwhile, St Michael's Manor Hotel is looking forward to its next fundraising event. It is called Master Cook at the Manor, and it will be held on September the 24th in aid of Rennie Grove Hospice Care. Guests can test their mettle in the hotel's professional kitchen, preparing and serving a dish to their friends and family, who in turn can watch their cooking tribulations on live screens around the restaurant. Each wannabe chef will be mentored by either Lussman's managing director, Andre Lussman, award-winning head chef at Thompson St Albans, Philip Thompson, or St Michael's Manor head chef, Sean Clark.
This is entitled Libraries for Life. A county council company has snapped up the Hertfordshire Libraries contract. Libraries for Life, a non-profit business created by Hertfordshire County Council, was granted the new contract as a way to cut costs. When putting the library service out to tender in October 2018, Hertfordshire County Council said it could reduce money spent on the service by £500,000 and would not impact library improvement plans. Councillor Terry Dorris, Hertfordshire Cabinet Member for Libraries, said the decision was made against a backdrop of ongoing financial pressures on council budgets. Libraries for Life bid was strong and will put us in the best possible position to continue the implementation of our inspiring library strategy in providing high-quality, innovative library services now and into the future. Libraries for Life plans to commence running the service from December.
A As the latest Hearts police recruits prepare to patrol our streets, the force's numbers have topped 2,000 for the first time in many years. This is the first time since 2011 that Hearts police's total police officer numbers have exceeded 2,000. With council tax increasing for certain residents, this has funded 75 new officers this year. PC Daniel Prisekaru, the 2001st officer, is one of the recent recruits. He'll proudly wear the warrant number 2001 on his uniform for the rest of his career. "I'm so proud," he says, "to be training as a police constable. It's the job I've always dreamed of," says Daniel, who was born in Romania. On Friday, Police and Crime Commissioner David Lloyd visited Letchworth Police Station to meet Daniel and 28 other trainees. He said, "Hearts residents have told me they want to pay for more officers on the streets, and that's what they're getting."
Interrogate the council. Residents are being invited to interrogate the council with their concerns, questions or comments. Individuals, businesses or community groups will be able to question St Albans District Council, listen to the response and then ask a supplementary question in a 15-minute slot at the monthly cabinet meetings. Queries should be relevant to the meeting's agenda, which is published a week in advance. The initiative was announced by Council Leader Chris White. "It will give us greater contact with the public and help us find out what their real and most pressing concerns are. It will also allow the public to hold us more accountable for our decisions by questioning us directly about what we're doing and why we're doing it. I'm hoping this fresh, innovative approach to how we operate will be well received and get residents more involved in our work. The first questions will be taken on September the 19th.
And this item is headed "Breast Milk Donation Scheme Celebrates First Anniversary." And it's accompanied by a photograph of all the families involved and the motorbike couriers who deliver the service. A Harpenden and Milk Bank, which has provided donated breast milk to over 1,000 babies, has celebrated its first anniversary. Donors of breast milk and families who've used Hearts Milk Bank recently marked the occasion with a picnic in the pavilion at Rothamsted. The picnic also coincided with World Breastfeeding Week between August the 1st and 6th and was supported by the Human Milk Foundation, HMF, which works to help more families feed their babies with human milk. Mums who sign up to Hearts Milk Bank volunteer to express their extra breast milk. The milk then gets biked by SERV volunteers to mothers whose babies can use the milk. Some of those are infants in hospital. Others have the milk delivered to their homes. New mums who can't breastfeed are particularly keen for their babies to benefit from the goodness of colostrum. Colostrum is the first stage of breast milk, which occurs during pregnancy and lasts for several days after birth. It's much thicker than the milk that is produced later in breastfeeding. Colostrum is high in protein, fat-soluble vitamins, minerals and immunoglobulins. Milk Bank co-founder Dr. Natalie Schenker said, "It was fantastic to bring together so many people who support the HMF and Hearts Milk Bank every day, but also the families we work with. There were mothers meeting each other who won't know whether that mum donated milk that helped her baby, but have had the chance to say what a difference it made. This was massively inspirational for the whole team and will launch us into our next year." The Milk Bank won a Point of Light Award earlier this year and was described by former Prime Minister Theresa May as a pioneering service that is transforming access to surplus breast milk across the UK. One of the milk donors, Flick, said, "I produced more milk than my baby needed. So it was wonderful to be able to donate this to the Hearts Milk Bank so it could go to tiny babies in need and support families through difficult times." Parents, Joe and Chris, received donor milk for their twins, who were born prematurely. Joe said, "Having donor milk lifted such a huge weight from me. Sitting in the obstetric close observation unit, desperately trying to express my own milk, restricted due to dangerously low sodium levels, and unable to visit my babies, was horrendous. When Chris arrived with the cooler containing the donor milk, I sobbed with relief and gratitude. Donor milk meant that I could be sure my premature babies would be fed with milk from a human mother, and they would be getting the benefit of the rich and vastly varied composition of breast milk while protecting their tiny and immature gut. I think what I'm saying is that donor milk made the difference between despair and hope. It gave me space to breathe and heal. It was estimated we wouldn't be home until after their term date. We came home 3 weeks early. There is no doubt a good part of the speedy trip through NICU was down to human milk. Yulia and her family also believe the milk bank is something to be celebrated. Her baby received donor milk as Yulia was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma during pregnancy, so could not breastfeed when her son was born. She said, "I don't know how to pick the right words to explain how much your help meant to us. Not only did you make an impact on our son's health start in life, you also helped us to fight through the cancer." The World Health Organization said breastfeeding promotes better health for mothers and children alike. Increasing breastfeeding to near universal levels could save more than 800,000 lives every year, the majority being children under 6 months. Breastfeeding decreases as the risk of mothers developing breast cancer, ovarian cancer, type 2 diabetes and heart disease. It's estimated that increased breastfeeding could avert 20,000 maternal deaths each year due to breast cancer.
Here's a plea from hundreds who joined to fight to save a golf course car wash. The owners of the car wash were asked by St Albans City and District Council to leave the golf course because they're occupying greenbelt land. Mehmet Emari has worked at the car wash along with three others since 2015. They pay rent to the golf course for the use of their ground, which is on Harpenden Road. The golf course manager, William Price, said everybody wants them to stay. It now has to go in front of a committee as we've raised over 500 signatures. It's just a quick drive in, clean your car and go. Everybody here is up in arms about it. There's no other car wash in Wheat Hampstead. Mehmet told the Hearts Advertiser in June that he'd been given notice to cease the business in 3 months' time. He said, "I comply with everything and the car wash is quite hidden away. I've got four people working here, including myself, and we've just been served a notice saying we're not wanted here anymore. I pay rent to the landlords and I've never missed that. It's helping the golf course as well with their expenses. If it wasn't for us, they might have gone under." The business was set up by Mehmet's friend, and after he moved elsewhere, Mehmet stayed to run the business. He travels to Wheat Hampstead every day from his home in London. The council has now stated that he and his colleagues did not have planning permission to use the golf course car park as a car wash facility or to build the associated shed on the land. Retrospective planning permission was refused, leading to an enforcement notice in April last year, which was upheld by an appeal decision in May this year. Tracy Harvey, the council's head of planning and building control, said, "The council has received a petition regarding the closure of the car wash at the golf course. The next opportunity for the council to receive the permission, the petition, is at their October 9th meeting. In this case, an independent planning inspector has upheld the council's planning enforcement notice. The planning inspectorate, in making its decision, concluded that Greenbelt and countryside should be protected."
Special Olympics Athletes film video at fitness studio. Athletes from Special Olympics visited a fitness studio in St Albans to film a video. Special Olympics provides sporting activities to children and adults with intellectual disabilities, and the St Albans branch has around 150 athletes who train each week. The group visited Sweatbox at 4 Lockie House, St Peter Street, to film pieces for an international nutrition and fitness programme. Sweatbox manager Nicola Kalosis said, "In the St Albans group that came to us were two World Games athletes, Thomas Miller, an equestrian athlete who came back from the World Games with 2 golds and 1 silver medal, and Tom Ward, who was part of the gold medal football team. It truly was a pleasure to meet with them and other Special Olympics athletes that represent St Albans. Their energy, vibrance and determination is a joy to see. We're looking forward to running classes with them at Sweatbox." The St Albans athletes train in athletics, boccia, a sport played in wheelchairs, equestrian, swimming, football, rugby and golf, and compete in local, national and international competitions. 7 athletes and 3 coaches from St Albans went to Abu Dhabi for the World Games in March, receiving 9 gold and 3 silver medals. In total, 7,000 athletes competed from around the world. Cara Pears from the Special Olympics National Office said, "The space at Sweatbox was brilliant for us. We've been filming pieces for an important nutrition and fitness program that Special Olympics runs internationally called Fit 5, which will release in the next few months across Great Britain. Nicola, Kieran and the team at Sweatbox were so incredibly welcoming to all of our athletes, allowing us to use their fantastic facilities for the afternoon. We're really excited to keep working with the team and make a lasting partnership in St Albans and beyond to help further the Special Olympics movement. The Special Olympics is open to people with learning disabilities from the age of 8 upwards, and the St Albans branch is run by Christine Ovenden. Sweatbox will continue to work with the athletes in the coming months and will start a weekly class for them to attend. And the article is accompanied by a picture of the Special Olympics athletes visiting the Sweatbox fitness studio, a picture of a group of very happy athletes all in their matching red t-shirts."
This is entitled "Patient Explains Why Hospice Services Are Invaluable as Charity Sets a £1 million Target." Redigrove is looking to raise £1 million to improve the hospice building at Grove House in St Albans, enabling them to offer more services to patients. Patient Anne Keane has been using the day service at Grove House since 2016 after being diagnosed with breast cancer. She has been blind in her right eye since childhood and was found to have a tumour behind her left eye and other tumours in her lungs and near her pelvis where the cancer had spread. She said, "I phoned Grove House and was encouraged to come along to a drop-in session. There I was able to speak to someone who gave me advice and pointed me in the right direction for the help I needed. Attending Nurse Clinic gave me the opportunity to talk to somebody to sort things out, both practically and emotionally. It put me in a better place and made me feel more prepared for whatever will happen to me." Anne was invited to take part in Redigrove's 6 weeks HOPE course, which stands for Help Overcoming Problems Effectively. The course encourages people to become more positive and includes meditation sessions, chair exercises, and a visit from a nutritionist. She also took part in a 10-week exercise course called The Movement, which encourages all participants to work at their own level. Anne said, "Coming to Grove House and using Redigrove's day services has given me the chance to talk to other patients. They know what it's like to go through chemo or radiotherapy, and being able to share experiences is really comforting. It's important to me to have everything prepared for my son so that when I'm gone, he doesn't have to make any decisions. With the encouragement of the Redigrove staff, I've been able to put everything in place. Nobody knows what's going to happen in the future, but it's nice to know that the path ahead of me is planned. I would recommend Redigrove and its services to anyone. To donate to the appeal, go to redigrove.org/ghappeal. You can also send a cheque to Redigrove, Grove House, Waverley Road, St Albans, AL3 5QX, made payable to Redigrove, and mark on the envelope the Grove House Appeal. In addition, you can call 01727 731 000 to make a card donation.
Well, this next item includes lots of very jolly, colourful pictures of a fun fair. And the title is Free Family Fun is the Ethos Behind the Third Meraki Festival. I must confess, I've not heard of that. Anyway, the St Albans Music Festival is back for its third year from August 23rd to August 25th, and it promises to be packed full of family-friendly activities, as well as featuring a host of brilliant artists and exciting entertainment. From laser tag to circus training, there's something for everyone. What's more, all these activities are free of charge once you have your ticket. Meraki have made sure that it's never been easier to say yes to your children, as they enjoy unlimited access to what the festival has to offer. Based on the idea of having family fun for free, Meraki are the only British festival to combine the two at their event. The festival founder, Kerry Marks, explains, "We are a festival with a difference. At Meraki, we're an all-inclusive festival, which basically means that once you're through the gates, you pay for nothing else. What that means for families especially is that when the children get in, they can do absolutely everything. We have amazing acts performing live from 10 in the morning to 11 at night on the main stage, and then the dance tent continues till 1 in the morning. We're a family-friendly outfit, so it's all about people coming with their families and having a great time, or just coming with your friends for the evening if you want to do the party event. We've got great food vendors, champagne buses. There's something for everyone. The most important thing is that you can budget. Once you've got your tickets, all you need is your food and drink, and then you can do absolutely everything. Even the massages and the glitter and the face painting is free. Budding performers can look forward to an array of theatrical and circus-themed activities. Street performers, acrobatic displays and a theatre are all widely available throughout the weekend to entertain and inspire. Fancy something active? How about having a go on the climbing wall or playing a game of mini golf? The more adventurous festival goers might enjoy the laser tag arena or the caving experience. And if that's not enough action, you can learn archery or go swimming in the little pools. Maybe you'll even be brave enough to take part in the talent show held in the Blue Moon Lounge. The Flying Seagull Project, a troupe of clowns, magicians, circus performers and musicians, will take part in various performances throughout the festival, encouraging adults to join in with their children for old school games and fun. Or for a more chilled out weekend, you can find a selection of more mellow activities, as well as a movie house playing films such as The Greatest Showman, Star Wars, The Last Jedi and Finding Dory. You can take part in a yoga session or hair braiding lessons. Similar activities include Lego, slime making and magic workshops, as well as a festival glitter bar. Some highlights from the main stage lineup include the tribute band Daft as Punk and British country band The Shires. For the retro music fans out there, amazing 80s features singers Paul Young, Carol Decker from T-Pow, Gary Christian and Katrina of Katrina and the Waves. And when you're not walking on sunshine, there's an array of activities available to fill you and your kids' time, including fairground rides and powder paint parties. So if you're bringing really little ones to Meraki, don't worry, they've got you covered with clean, well-lit baby changing facilities on site, with private spaces for changing and feeding.
The next article is headlined, Jack's on track to cross finish line of 500th marathon at age 67. A St Albans runner is on track to compete an epic 500 marathon races since turning 40. On August the 31st, Jack Brooks is taking part in the 5th annual St Albans Stampede Ultra Marathon, in which participants clock up as many miles as possible over 12 hours around a 4-mile loop of Sandridge's Hartwood Forest. Once the 67-year-old reaches 26.2 miles, he will have run 500 marathons in 27 years. He's racing in aid of Rennie Grove Hospice Care, a St Albans charity for people with life-limiting illnesses in Bucks and West Harts. Jack also ran his 200th and 300th marathon for Rennie Grove and raised more than £4,000. He said, "Running has not only fulfilled my love of keeping fit, but it has allowed me to travel the world, meet new people and be part of an amazing community. Completing my 500th race will fulfil a major ambition of mine. Being able to do it on home soil and also raising money for a local charity makes it all the more special." Jack caught the running bug at 40 after attending a party with friends who had completed the Cambridge Half Marathon and promised to join them the following year. "There are still loads of places around the world I'm keen to run, some in which my friends are organising races, which is great. I definitely picture myself running for a long time to come." Jack, whose full birth name is Arthur John Brooks, believes he is also the first UK citizen to complete a marathon in all 50 US states and all 13 Canadian provinces and territories. "He's had memorable experiences along the way. A grizzly bear crossed the road in between him and another runner in Yukon. Jack trains at Westminster Lodge Leisure Centre at Hollywell Hill, which is operated by Everyone Active on behalf of St Albans Council. General Manager Leslie Garner said, "Jack is a testament to the fact that you can do anything if you put your mind to it, no matter your age or ability. Over the past 8 years, Jack has inspired us all at Westminster Lodge to take on different fitness challenges. We can't wait to cheer him on as he runs in his 500th marathon next month."
Here are the names of people who have died recently as published in this week's Hearts Advertiser. Violet Muriel Freeman, who was aged 92. David Mattingly, is no age given. Alec Norman Patterson, who's aged 85. Irene Woodward, no age is given. Connie Partridge, who was aged 97. Irene Carmel Payne, no age is given. May they rest in peace. Former St Albans City Youth Junior has agreed a deal to stay in the Women's Super League. Megan Wayne signed for Tottenham Hotspur for the third time at the beginning of last season, joining for Millwall Lionesses. And the 26-year-old wing-back, who previously had loaned spells at the club in 2013 and 2016 when she was at Watford, went on to make 26 appearances in all competitions. These appearances helped Spurs to promotion into the top flight for the first time, with the Welsh international becoming the 12th player to be retained from last season's squad. Speaking to the club's website, she said This club means a lot to me, so to sign a new contract is an amazing feeling. To be part of this squad for our debut season in the Women's Super League is so exciting. It makes all the hard work and dedication over the years worthwhile. I cannot wait to test myself at the top level.
Well, here's a cheery photograph of Thameslink Gavaya staff gathered around a lovely planter on the platform at Harpenden Station. And the headline is, "New floral displays have brightened up Harpenden Station." Harpenden residents and Gavaya Thameslink staff planted 100 locally sourced shrubs and plants at the station, including, this is tricky, Bidens, Vinca, Huchera and Calibrachoa. They put 2,000 litres of compost in the 10 planters, which had been constructed by the inmates of HM Prison The Mount as part of a Gavaya Thameslink community programme. Retired Harpenden resident Stephen Webster helped with the planting. The 70-year-old said, "I'm very keen on gardening, and anything to do with brightening up the station on the daily commute is a good thing. And Gavaya Thameslink staff are very nice people to work with as well." The Harpenden Garden Scheme project leader, Alex Hambleton, said, "The whole concept is to give passengers stations they can be proud of and stations they can enjoy. It's hoped people will now volunteer to look after the planters alongside the station team. Anyone interested in this should speak to the station staff. St Albans will also be decorated with floral displays soon."
Medieval days. A St Albans church is inviting people to party like it's 1539 at a medieval festival. A series of Medieval Days events will be held at St Michael's Church and the Kingsbury Barn from September the 17th to the 21st to raise money for maintenance of the church building. Harry Christopher of Choral Group The 16 will visit the church at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, September the 17th to talk about the group. On Friday, September the 20th, there will also be a performance of Remembering King Arthur, Tales from Logres, featuring Sue McMillan and Hannah McDowell. On Saturday at Kingsbury Barn, there'll be an English martial arts demonstration by Meister Terry Brown, medieval drinks and music, tricycle jousting, Nerf archery and medieval cross for kids. There'll also be talks about the Anglo-Saxon experience in Verulamium, Dragons, Arms and Armours.
This article is entitled "Boy with Mum's Donated Kidney Wins 2 Medals in Transplant Games." A St Albans boy who was given one of his mum's kidneys to stay alive has won 2 medals in the British Transplant Games. Oliver Goddard, aged 9, was born with kidney disease, and both parents were found to have a match, but decided his mum would be the one to donate her kidney. The games were held in Newport from July the 25th to the 28th. The British Transplant Games has been running for over 40 years, with the first one in Portsmouth in 1978. The family found out about the event through Great Ormond Street Hospital. Oliver was excited to get involved in the games and entered the speed stacking, having been taught how to do it in year 4. He said he felt more confident due to this. He also opted to enter the speed walking, as he wanted to try something new. To his surprise, the Bernard's Heath school pupil won a bronze medal in the speed stacking and a silver medal in speed walking. He said, "I felt really happy that I've achieved something for my first transplant games." His mother, Jane Goddard, completed the 3-kilometre run, which was specifically for organ donors dressed as a turkey. She said, "I used to work in a fancy dress shop called Fun Zone, and when I left there, I said if ever they sold the turkey costume, I would like to buy it. So this was a brilliant opportunity to dress up, have some fun, and raise awareness of organ donation. My husband jokes, that's very fitting as I am a giblet down since I only have one kidney. His sister Lottie, 7, and Oliver's dad James were both at the games cheering them on. James said, I'm so proud of Oliver that after only 2 years since his transplant, he was able to compete in the British Transplant Games, and winning 2 medals was the icing on the cake. We can't wait to attend the games next year. He added, the other families we met were amazing. We don't often get to meet people who walked a similar path to us, but at the transplant games, we felt a huge sense of belonging.
This next headline reads as follows. Is there a place for religion in education? Parents and teachers offer their views. Humanists UK, a national charity representing non-religious people and secular interests, argues that our current education system is outdated. The organisation believes the legal requirement for schools to have daily collective worship with a general Christian type ethos is not suitable for young people growing up in modern Britain. It follows the decision by an atheist couple living in Oxfordshire to take their children's primary school to the High Court, claiming biblical reenactments and praying in assembly are a breach of their human rights. RE is the only subject where parents have the legal right to ask for their child to be removed. In its 2018 primary survey, the National Association of Teachers of Religious Education, the NATRE, found that almost 16% of schools surveyed said they had some parents using the right of withdrawal. The Hearts Advertiser spoke to some parents about their experiences and views to gauge the local perspective. St Albans parent Andy Hahn said, I am interested in my child not being forced into participating in the religious aspect of school. I'm waiting to see what it's like at the school before I withdraw her. I'm nervous that she'll feel left out. All teachers are made aware of the right for parents to withdraw from religious education during their training. And local primary teacher Lauren Valerie said, as a school, you have to respect the wishes of the parents. But Sherry Scales asks, I wonder how many people buy their children Easter eggs or Christmas presents. Is that not pushing religion on their children? Parent Terry Bates said, in my opinion, state-funded schooling should be secular, with all mainstream religions covered and respected as part of world studies. Assembly should include messages of tolerance and British values. Jenna Clayton agrees. If you want kids to be well-rounded, then they need to be exposed to as much worldly knowledge as possible. Tess Matchling holds similar views. An understanding of the world we live in and of those whose lives are different to our own can only be a good thing. Faz Rallier recalled his own experiences of RE lessons at Verulam School. There was a room that used to have Jews, Muslims and Hindus who didn't attend assembly, as it was a Christian assembly with hymns. Even Mr. Flanagan, who was Jewish, did not attend. While some parents believe missing RE or assemblies could encourage intolerance, Louis Eve disagrees. Missing out on a few assemblies or RE lessons isn't going to make a child racist at all. If anything, you'll find most racism stems from the way they've been brought up in their own home. Teacher Lauren Valerie explained the way Christianity is presented in non-faith schools. The way that non-faith schools teach RE is so that it is clear to the children that it is a belief of the religion and not as fact or the belief of the teacher. For instance, Christians believe the Bible is the Word of God. Faith schools are different as they have a specific focus in their ethos, which is made clear when parents are choosing which school to send their child to. Humanists UK say, current law and government guidance discriminates in favour of religion in requiring daily acts of collective worship in schools, and in favour of Christianity in requiring that for schools without a religious character, the majority of these acts of collective worship should be of a broadly Christian character. The content of religious education lessons is agreed nationally by the Standing Advisory Council on Religious Education, a group of advisers from different religious groups. The NATRE added, agreed syllabuses used in schools which are not designated with a religious character must reflect the fact that the religious traditions in Great Britain are in the main Christian, while taking account of the teaching and practices of other principal religions represented in Great Britain.
14-year-old actor lands lead role in indie feature film. A St Albans teenager has landed a lead role in an independent coming-of-age film. Illyrian Bushy will appear as Charlie in a film called Cardboard Fort, which is a comedy written and directed by film and television production student at the University of York, Sam Hartshorn. The story starts when Charlie's beloved cardboard fort is mysteriously torched and his developing friendships shattered. Charlie has various adventures while hunting the arsonist, including a water fight, game of capture the flag, and bike race through Harrogate, where the movie is filmed. 14-year-old Illyrian auditioned for the role by recording himself and sending the tape in. His mum, Ross Bushy, said Illyrian was jumping around the room in excitement when he received the news. It is Sam Hartshorn and other crew members, Joshua Dwyer, Ruby Churchill, Oscar Godfrey, Tiva Fox, Jacob Boyle, Marco Alexiadis, Thomas Sandler's first feature film, which they raised with a Kickstarter campaign. However, it is not Illyrian's debut performance. His cast reel includes a Cadbury's billboard, a Samsung internet advert, and various parts in productions at the Alban Arena. 3 years ago, he spent 10 days in Scotland filming for CBBC's Raven as Ilibus, a warrior of the wolf banner. Illyrian said, "I've been busy reading the script, ready to start filming. It's amazing and really funny too. I'm honoured to have been chosen to portray the role of Charlie in Cardboard Fort and can't wait to meet the rest of the young cast and crew." Illyrian regularly attends workshops and masterclasses run by acting coaches and casting directors and is represented by D-Boss Talent Management. Mum Roz said, "It's like being part of a huge talented family. Their communications and dedication to their clients is second to none. And Illyrian has been lucky to have been given so many exciting opportunities with Dee Tracy and the D-Boss team."
Now for some tips about what you can listen to on the radio during the coming week. Starting on Saturday, August the 10th, and a new series called Alex Adelman's Special Relationships on Radio 4 at 10:30 in the morning. He invites broadcaster and comedian Aisha Hazariki, historian Greg Jenner, and musician John Grant to mull over the tensions between life in private and life in public. The first instalment features revelations about social life, social networking, and what the panel would like to keep private. In the afternoon, you can tune in to From Luton Streets to Jersey Shores, starting at 3:30 on Radio 4. The film, Blinded by the Light, the story of the Luton-raised journalist Sarfraz Manzoor's love affair with the songs of Bruce Springsteen, is currently in cinemas across the country. This radio programme, first broadcast in 2006, covers the ground too and is loosely based on Sarfraz Manzoor's memoir as he heads to New Jersey on a sort of pilgrimage to his idol Bruce Springsteen. Incidentally, the film Blinded by Light will be reviewed on Saturday Review on Radio 4 at 7:15. In the evening, it's well worth a listen if you enjoy keeping up with what's new and rated at the cinema or theatre, in the book world or on TV. And I should mention here that Sarfraz Manzoor was a pupil at the school where I was a head teacher, but not at the same time. This Saturday, the panel will also be providing an overview of the good bits from the Edinburgh Festival and Fringe, and reviewing a new adaptation for the theatre of Kate Grenville's novel, The Secret River. At 5:30, the inquiry on Radio 4 is highly topical, as it asks, will China crack down on Hong Kong? The current protest, triggered by the proposal for a new extradition bill, have been going on since June, and the demonstrations are getting more violent. So, how will China respond as tensions rise?
Moving now to Sunday, August the 11th. Former Prime Minister Gordon Brown takes to the airwaves at 1:30 on Radio 4 to mark the centenary of the death of the steel car tycoon and philanthropist Andrew Carnegie. Gordon Brown regards Carnegie as the greatest philanthropist who ever lived, someone who argued that to die rich was to die disgraced. Someone who poured his wealth into improving education for all and indirectly helped Gordon Brown's own father to go to university. So why is education no longer regarded as the most important means of addressing the challenges facing the world? Asks Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown on The Gospel of Wealth is on Sunday on Radio 4 at 1:30. Then, 200 years ago this week, the people of Manchester witnessed the slaughter of 18 demonstrators on the streets around St. Peter's Field, and hundreds more injured during what's known as the Peterloo Massacre. Over 60,000 people had gathered to hear the radical parliamentary reformer Henry Hunt speak, but the cavalry charged the crowd, with sabres and chaos and slaughter ensuing. A Poet Laureate's Peterloo on Radio 4 at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon will be dedicated to that peaceful rally. Carol Ann Duffy, soon to relinquish her post as Poet Laureate, will be joined by singer-songwriter Catherine Williams and other poets to perform new work with a 21st century response to the Peterloo Massacre. Also marking this event, Sunday worship at 8:10 on Radio 4, comes from St Anne's Church in Manchester, and the Bishop of Manchester, the Right Reverend David Walker, will reflect on the spiritual legacy of the massacre. Now, this might sound like a serious lineup for a Sunday, but there's just one more serious recommendation to make, and that's a series of short stories on Radio 4 at 7:45 in the evening, and it's called Stillicide, The Water Train. The first story imagines an uncanny near future when water is commodified or rationed and the train that carries the supply to the main city is threatened with sabotage. The readers include Alex Jennings and Anne-Marie Duff. Let's hope that scenario doesn't come true here.
And now to those programmes which are broadcast daily from Monday to Friday at the same time. The Book of the Week at 9:45 every morning on Radio 4 is Mudlarking. It's Laura Micklem's history of London and its people, told through the objects that Laura has found along the banks of the River Thames. At 10:45, and then again in the evening at 7:45, you can hear the 15-minute drama, which this week is The Latvian Locum. This is the second series of the comedy drama, about the experiences of a Latvian doctor in the British Health Service. After the surgery where she worked in Blackpool is closed, Dr. Zaki relocates to Cornwall and finds herself facing a whole new set of challenges. Debussy is the composer of the week on Radio 3 at 12 noon. These four programmes from Tuesday to Friday chronicle Debussy's life at the turn of the 19th century when he was in his 30s. Then, following the world at 1 each day, you can turn into Breakdown at 1:45 p.m. on Radio 4. The programmes combine sound archive, on-location interviews and previously unheard testimony from the 1969 Scarman Tribunal to try to find out what really happened during the week in August 1969 when law and order broke down and Northern Ireland erupted into the violence of the Troubles. Some other radio highlights of the week include Reflections on Monday, August the 12th. This is the third in a series of interviews by Peter Hennessy with leading political figures of our time. This week he's talking to Norman Lamont about his tenure as Chancellor of the Exchequer during the sterling crisis of Black Wednesday in 1992, when the pound was forced out of the European exchange mechanism. Norman Lamont also talks about his support for Britain's entry into the EU and how his support faded until he became an active campaigner for Brexit in 2016. On Tuesday, August the 13th, land power versus sea power sounds an interesting listen. Britannia, of course, famously once ruled the waves, but while those days seem to have long gone, our seafaring legacy lives on, according to Phil Tinline, who's compiled this programme. He traces the military might of today's superpowers back to the prophecies of two 19th century thinkers and muses too on the conflicts to come, perhaps in the South China Sea or the Eurasian Plain. Land power versus sea power is on Radio 4 on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Highlights from the Cambridge Folk Festival feature in Mark Ratcliffe's folk show on Wednesday, August the 14th, starting at 9 p.m. on Radio 2. This year's festival is curated by Mercury Prize nominated Nick Mulvey, and you can hear a wide range of musicians performing in the grounds of Cherry Hinton Hall. And if you feel in need of some laughter, then try listening to the Radio 4 Comedy Award final on Thursday, August the 15th, from 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. Five of the UK's most exciting new comedy acts compete for the coveted title Live from the Edinburgh Festival. The fun all starts at 6:30. There's a break for the Archers at 7, but the Comedy Award final continues from 7:15. Of course, there's also masses of classical and popular music from the proms during the week. Radio 3 has live coverage from 11 a.m. every day. On Friday, August the 16th, there's a special tribute prom to Queen Victoria and Prince Albert, showcasing music by Her Majesty's favourite composer, Felix Mendelssohn. The concert ends with his Scottish Symphony, which Mendelssohn dedicated to the Queen, and also includes his Piano Concerto No. 1, which Stephen Hough will perform on Victoria's own glittering gilt piano on loan from the Royal Collection. We hope you enjoy your listening choices.
We've now come to the end of this recording. So from Michael, John and Roy, and from Alex, who recorded and edited this edition, and Jill, who chose the radio selections, goodbye, and here's to the next time.